The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Kevin Divney joins us now. He's Chief Investment Officer at Beacon Crest Capital Management, based in Boston, but certainly taking a look at the markets broadly. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
So let's start by taking a look at retail sales. What it means or doesn't mean right now for the stock market. It was a number that came in flat in April, but March revised higher, February revised higher. We just heard from Michelle Girard of RBS that basically the consumer spending, it's pushing the economy to sort of modest growth. What does that mean for stocks?
Well, after what happened in the first quarter, what a lot of management teams are looking for, both in retail and other sectors, is a large bounce back in economic activity. So we expect Q2 to be very strong. So the numbers this morning were somewhat of a surprise and disappointing. I thought what was interesting is what we saw in the earnings reporting season, that the overall forecasts for 2014 were not taken down by the slowdown in economic activity from Q1. So what managements are expecting is this Q2 is going to have a lot of excess activity that making up for what happened in the first quarter. So the retail numbers this morning are somewhat of a source of concern. But as you mentioned, the consumer has been muted, and they've been conservative and they've been cautious.
But they have been spending. Of course, that's one thing that's interesting. If you look at retail sales, people forget that even in a recession, people keep spending, right? And then that's a question of what they're spending their money on. And if you look inside the report, department stores did surprisingly well. Again, all these numbers are volatile, but people spent at department stores. They didn't buy as much furniture, but they bought building materials. Are there any signals for companies in the retail space here?
I think one big signal is we've seen the psychological component, all the surveys coming out, is consumer confidence is increasing. And that has to do with, I think, the low interest rate environment that has held on for a long time. They're seeing the largest asset that most consumers own, their house, increasing in value and stabilizing in prices of the household sector. And it's been interesting because this recovery has been somewhat inverted. Typically, the soft goods tend to lead, the smaller items, the smaller ticket purchases. But what we saw earlier, especially last year, was a lot of the durable good purchases were increasing and accelerating. So that shows a good set of, that says a lot of confidence on the part of consumers that they're willing to spend on big ticket items.
What are there, if you look at a space where you're looking for companies to buy right now, is retail on your list or not? Seems to me there's so much competition for a lot of these retailers and you've got so many of them in transition. For the way you select stocks right now, are they an area that you look at all, Kevin, or do you say, no thanks, not now?
Retailers are very neutral in the way we look at the world right now. Partly, we look at valuation and quality and earnings trajectory. We don't see a lot of compelling reasons to be in there for the competitive reasons that you mentioned. And also, we just see other sectors that are bubbling to the top right now. And I think the other thing with retailers, which is very difficult, is if we like to have a longer horizon on the business of the companies we're investing in. Right now, I think retail is very much short-term because it is month-to-month, quarter-to-quarter, and a lot of the fashion rotation that's going on seems to be not as trending as it has been in the past.
And if you're looking for companies that are interesting right now, so I think when we think of retail sales, it's whatever, everything people buy. I mean, it includes cell phones and all kinds of stuff, but it doesn't include, of course, business purchases, right? It doesn't include the kinds of things that some of the big tech companies would benefit from, right? If you're enterprise or the cloud, though, some of those areas have been hot, and that isn't reflected in retail sales. That's got to be in a broader measure of spending. So is it more kind of what businesses are spending their money on right now? You see potential for growth than what the retail consumer is.
Exactly. We're much more focused on the business spending because there's a lot of visibility there when it takes hold. And obviously, the large catalyst for the market and the economy in 2014 is going to be capital expenditure on the part of enterprises. They've been doing maintenance capex for the last couple of years, and we're starting to see signs of that increasing in the energy sector, in the industrial sector, in some parts of the production sector for energy as well. So that is the big catalyst that we're seeing. And when companies are spending money on technology, on plant and equipment, that's the largest sign of confidence.
All righty. Could you give me one example of the companies who are doing it right now?
I think a company like EOG Resources, which is focused on oil and gas exploration and production. Now, we've been focused more on the refiners because of the lower cost inputs from U.S. Drilling and exploration, but you're seeing increases in capital expenditure in the energy sector. And then some of the derivative plays of that on the communication and the cloud side and the basically delivery of these services to our home, companies like Aris Technology, which helps you get all those services in your home for internet and TV.
It's a gorgeous day in New York. Lovely day in Boston as well, I hope.
A little colder than yesterday, but well, yes, spring is coming.
There you go. It's here. And we are wondering, of course, what that is going to mean for investors. Are we going to kind of spring up full of all this energy? People often say, you know, sell in May and go away, but you don't agree this year.
No, I don't. I think you have to be cautious. It has been a very persistent trend the last 4 years since the crisis. Generally, we don't think seasonality is something that's a sustainable investment approach. But what we're seeing, though, that is causing concerns for being somewhat defensive is this rotation to value phenomenon that began really in March, is that while we have not seen the overall market really go up or down, we've seen a massive rotation within certain sectors or subsectors. And really what it's been about is maintaining some of the fundamental themes that persisted last year, but investors are really paying much more attention to valuation, especially on the short side of portfolios, too. Really shorting expensive stocks has done well for a lot of strategies this year in 2014.
So flesh that out maybe with some examples.
Well, I think you've seen a lot of the high internet plays, some of the cloud plays, where companies have just been pushed down so much farther than their valuations were supporting at the end of last year. There was a lot of momentum into that into 2014. And then also in some of the consumer plays, not as much, but really it's been about tech and in the biotech space as well, where the valuations were inflated. Now, we're seeing some very high-quality companies that still look attractive in the space, that some of the old staples, and for example, in technology hardware, Hewlett-Packard is something that looks appealing to us on valuation in both the trajectory and the business. They're experiencing somewhat of a turnaround in that space. And some of the other companies within the cloud space, like VMware, which has done well, but still on historical cash flow and forward-looking metrics, is something that we don't think is worth exiting right here.
Okay. I want to come back to EOG Resources and some of the ancillary plays. We had another guest, I believe when someone was on last week, who also liked EOG Resources. So clearly, this is a company that represents something that a lot of the pros like you are seeing now.
Yes. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, their commitment to larger capital expenditure is really something that's positive. Now, the margins look attractive. The revenues have been accelerating at the top line. We obviously have this big energy story here in the United States. They're one of the major players. We have been playing the energy cycle mostly through the refiners because the discount you get from West Texas Intermediate crude relative to the North Sea Brent, so some of those local refiners have done very, very well. But now we're getting into the longer play names where their confidence to invest and increase those revenues and increase their margins as their revenues have increased by over 40% in the last 4 years.
When you look at what the objectives of investors and psychology, how do you take those into effect? Because it seems that that's one of the things that you can't ignore. You had the big 30% gain last year. People could sort of ride up, you know, just buy the market and say, end of the year, saying, wow, I did great. Now, this year comes along and people would, you know, either they didn't get it or if they did, they're probably saying, it's not going to go up 30%. What should I do with my money?
It's very important, and it's interesting. Since the crisis, I think that when we think about our clients and participants in the market, it's about objectives and constraints, right? It's about what is my return objectives, what are my risk constraints that I have to achieve. But now psychology is a really big part because there is fear, and it's a lot of muscle memory in the market from not just the financial crisis, but .com. So what that's manifested into is very short-term thinking a lot of times in the stock market, and that does create opportunities for us to get in on things like valuation and returns on capital. But also, you can't fight against that sometimes. If we saw that mini reversal in the third week of January, which was, market trended down very quickly, very sharply. There was really no catalyst there to drive it. It just became sort of this, I made money, maybe I need to take profits very aggressively. So when we think about market participants and think about clients' objectives, they are thinking about risk in a new way after the two events of the last 10 years, which I think is a healthy thing. They're trying to think of their portfolios in a risk space, not just in a return space. And that obviously is going to affect flows, which drives the market, and also the momentum value battle that's constant within the U.S. stock market.
Mm-hmm. But of course, you just said that the trend so far has been this shift away from momentum and growth, looking for value.
Right, which is very healthy because the momentum, to me, it has been driving returns a lot for the last couple of years. It's a very short-term signal, and it seems beneficial to a lot of investors in the short term, but what happens when it does correct, it's much more violent, and the downturns in momentum are much more dramatic than the downturns in a value strategy or a quality strategy in a portfolio.
So how do you deal with that?
We want to monitor all those components. So there's the barometer of the stock market, if you will. So we look at the overall levels, which obviously is important, but that's not really what's driving returns. You want to see what is driving on a particular day, month, on a trailing basis, and most importantly, look at that relative to history. When we screen for ideas, when we construct our portfolios, what we want to ensure is they're insulated against momentum downturns, but perhaps exploiting value upside. So that's been a trend in our portfolio construction and our stock screening approach right now. But more importantly is that we build a 20, 30-year history of those to understand where we are in this cycle of momentum and value. Now, we saw something similar in 2001, 2002, right, where momentum worked. Your prior guest was talking about .com, and it worked, and then all of a sudden value dominated for a couple of years. You don't want to ignore other strategies, but you want to use sort of this multiple approach and understand what's going on in the overall market.
When you look at fundamentals, is it more for you now fundamentals of companies than it is, say, fundamentals of the economy? And I particularly want to say, is the Federal Reserve sort of scratched off your list right now, even if the Fed would start raising rates a little bit sooner?
It is because of two things. One, any reaction to Fed speak or misspeak is going to be short-term and transitory. But also, realistically, there's been a diminishing return to the Fed stimulus on the economy. I think we're going to question what it was anyway. It's been an emergency process. We're no longer in an emergency. We've seen companies delever. We have not seen consumers borrow a whole lot more because at the same time you were stimulating, you had this, you know, constrictive regulatory environment for credit as well, so it really hasn't done. So yes, it's much more of a back burner, and we see that. Again, looking at the barometer of a market, that stock-specific characteristics are driving much more than macro policy, either fiscal or monetary. I mean, fiscal's been in the back seat for a few years. I don't see it coming back anytime soon, probably not even until 2017, if at all. At the same time, the monetary policy having those diminishing returns. And on fundamentals, the companies, the U.S. companies, look very, very strong. Mm-hmm. Their balance sheets have been repositioned. They're very healthy. Margins at an all-time high. This is an ongoing debate. Can it continue? We don't see margins reverting anytime soon because there is a lot of operating leverage in the system. And what growth that is out there, U.S. companies are able to pursue and generate their healthy returns on capital from it.
And returns on capital are so important. Well, let's just kind of run through some quick points then. When you look at, let's start with which industries you're in, which sectors. Basically, you're looking at a fairly pro-cyclical model here. Let's start with technology.
Technology, we are focused a lot on the communication sector and anything having to do with cloud infrastructure. So that is, we're moving into this multiple device accessing your data world, and that's going to be wearables, it's iPads, it's portable devices, it's your home. So there's an integration aspect going on, and in concert with that is a bandwidth approach and investment in bandwidth going on as well. So anything as a theme that we're looking for, and we play different companies within there, is anything that helps the end consumer or enterprise get to what they need to get to in a more efficient and productive way. And that is, it's a great theme right now because the trend is not going to reverse anytime soon. The players, there's going to be winners and losers, but
So give us another winner in this.
The one I mentioned earlier, you know, Aris Technologies, which helps you basically access everything in your house to be able to, you know, look at your email, look at your favorite cable shows and store them and look at them on your iPad when you're not in your home anymore.
Okay. Sort of like George Jetson's Rosie the Maid, only a lot more compact.
Exactly.
Transportation.
That is a sector we see a lot of health in for a couple reasons. One is going back to the consumer. American consumers are very intelligent, very informed, and they find good deals and they know how to exploit them. So some of the regional airlines, Alaska Air is one that we like very, very much.
I love Alaska Air. They're great to fly.
They're terrific. They find hubs where there's underserved markets, and they're able to exploit on that, and the fares are very, very low. And so, and we see, you know, air miles flown increasing. There's obviously higher capacity utilization in the U.S. air carrier system ever in history because it gets more efficient. But even with the disruption we saw from weather this year, I thought that was an opportunity to buy some of these companies.
Okay.
And then on the other side, we're seeing the whole rail sector benefiting from the energy play and transportation. So we see some of the infrastructure plays.
Your favorite railway?
Well, we don't actually play the rails directly, but a company like that sells equipment into the rails for Wabco Holdings, for example, that helps them make the rail cars.
Okay. So quickly, we've got automobiles and energy. Who do you like in autos?
Again, we're focused more on the suppliers. There's two suppliers that we like in the automobile sector, Lear Corp, which does a lot of the high value adds within the cockpit of the U.S. Auto manufacturers, and a company called Drew Industries, which actually makes a lot of the components that goes in recreational vehicles, which are hitting all-time highs again for sales.
And you already told us you like EOG Resources.
Yes.
Anybody else?
In the energy space, we like Holly Frontier, the refiner, as well, because they're benefiting from this cheaper input cost from U.S. energy production.
So overall, I know you're really big and you're making this point now, you got to buy individual companies. Just a couple seconds left here, though. How overall, what kind of gains do you see in the stock market this year, Kevin, when we get to the beginning of next year?
I still think the S&P 500 is going to be around 1950. With some volatility this summer and the post-Labor Day period, we'll probably see a more stable trending up. I mean, the big catalysts out there are obviously stability in Fed policy, and then there's also an election coming up, which the market really hasn't started to discount yet.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.